Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today, with all the various hostilities going on around the world, seemingly fueled by the U.S.-Israeli cabal of evil, I'd like to present Rick Jonkow. Rick is a founder of Project Yano, and that is offering non-military opportunities to youth in San Diego. And he's also a co-founder and on the board of NOMI. And NOMI is a national network opposing militarization of youth. And so we and I've said it a long time, and these organizations say it, stop it before it starts. Stop our young people before they even go. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Rick Jonkow. Rick Jonkow, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here, and thank you for your decades-long dedication to peace and to keeping our young people out of the military. So, Rick, why don't you tell my listeners about the organizations that you represent?
I work for, full-time, an organization based in San Diego called the Project on Youth and Non-Military Opportunities. The acronym that we use is Project Yano. Yano in Spanish, it's a way of saying not anymore, no longer.
Right.
And it's been around since 1984, and mostly we were formed to approach local high schools in order to reach students and offer them an alternative view on military enlistment, and also offer them information about other options to consider when it comes to financial aid for college and job training and community service. I also am representing a national network that Project Yano was one of the co-founders of. It's called the National Network Opposing the Militarization of Youth, and the acronym for that is NOMI. So when I say NOMI, I'm talking about the national network. And that was formed in 2005 officially. It was originally proposed a year earlier, but the founding conference occurred in Philadelphia in 2005.
Well, San Diego, of course, has only become more militarized since you founded Project Yano, and it's a huge military town, so your work is very much needed there. And Philadelphia, in the past, has been very successful in their efforts to shut down What were those centers called? Were the kids? And I visited it. It was in a mall in Philadelphia.
Yes.
And it was where kids could, young people, I keep calling them kids, anything to me under like 40 these days is a kid, but where young people could go in and play video games. And it almost looked like an arcade.
It was. Mm-hmm. It was called the Army Experience
That's
Center.
That's right.
And it was about the size, I think, of three basketball courts, and they allowed young people as young as age 13 to use some of the equipment, the weapon simulators, for example. And it was shut down. It was a campaign, a regional campaign, I think, that mobilized people to oppose it, and it was really a test. The Army was just trying to find
right.
out how well that kind of a facility would work, and I think they became convinced that it was not going to work. So they shut it down and did not expand and didn't open any other ones as well.
And so how are your efforts going in San Diego?
Well, our efforts in San Diego have kind of evolved over years. When we began in 1984, we were just seeking to get into classrooms to present a video. Actually, at that time, it was a slideshow because mm-hmm. that was the technology back then.
Right.
And we had military veterans who would go in with teams of speakers to classrooms and talk about the realities of being in the military and war, and then we would talk about alternatives as well. And we gradually expanded that outreach to from classrooms to career centers in the schools, and eventually began setting up displays at career fairs that were held in schools. In the last 15 years or so, we have shifted more towards resource development and editing and updating materials that other groups around the country use. And we're still involved in local schools to some extent. We present workshops at youth conferences, and we do some local organizing and support of local organizing when it comes to issues like removing shooting ranges, JROTC shooting ranges from schools. But we have put more of our time and resources into, as I say, developing resources that are used by other groups around the country.
And this is a thing, you just talked about the JROTC, the JROTC shooting ranges in schools. And I consider myself pretty well informed about militarism and counter-recruitment and things like that, but I actually had never heard of shooting ranges in schools. And we were talking before we started the interview that literally kids get expelled from school for bringing letter openers, but the military could come in and have a shooting range, especially with the expanding, it seems like, incidents in school where young people are using their schools to go in and, you know, kill fellow students and teachers. It seems amazing to me that I shouldn't be amazed because I am well informed, but I'm just stunned that they're operating shooting ranges in schools.
You're like a lot of other people who also are shocked when they find out about that. The situation is that there are now over 3,000 high schools in the country that have a junior ROTC unit. And according to one source, the Civilian Marksmanship Program, which actually organizes shooting matches for young people, they claim that a majority of the junior ROTC units have marksmanship training. Now, that is part of the program that is elective. That is, the students who join junior ROTC can choose to engage in marksmanship training. They don't have to. Mm-hmm. But with over half of the schools in the country having marksmanship training, many of them, if not most, have shooting ranges in the school itself. These are sometimes the students in the school are aware of it, and some of the teachers are aware of it. But even sometimes the teachers are not aware of it, and parents are even less aware. What happened in San Diego, as just an example, is that we heard that a new junior ROTC unit for the Marine Corps was going to be opened at a school called Mission Bay High School. Uh-huh. And they were going to build the shooting range there. We made contact with a few students who were upset that first of all, that the program was even coming to the school, but secondly, that there were two classrooms that were being converted into a shooting range. And they were pretty offended. They thought, you know, there's a zero tolerance policy on weapons, and yet the Department of Defense is granted an exception. They thought that, especially in their communities, and this is a school where about 80% of the students are bused from poor parts of San Diego City, they felt that in their communities, violence was a real issue, and they thought this was just hypocrisy to for their school to teach kids to shoot. Now, the guns that are used in the shooting ranges today are high-powered pellet rifles. They shoot lead pellets. They used to be 22 caliber ammunition, but that was discontinued by the military a few years back, probably because they were they realized it was a public relations problem. When we heard about Mission Bay High School, we also heard that at another school that was being rebuilt, they were building a new shooting range for their junior ROTC unit. So people in the community who were concerned, and this included students, some teachers, and parents, came together. We formed a coalition and went to the school district, the San Diego City School District. We found out that there were already 11 high schools in the district that had shooting ranges, and this would have added two more. And a campaign was waged that resulted in the school board agreeing to ban not only the shooting ranges, but any kind of marksmanship training in the district. And it was a major thing to happen in San Diego, considering the heavy presence of the military, which you referred to earlier. We have over 110,000 personnel in uniform stationed in San Diego County. So the climate here is not actually that receptive to any kind of activity that challenges the military in any way.
Right.
So that's what happened here, and what we learned was that the important thing is for students and parents to become involved in that kind of a campaign. And when there is violence going on, in fact, there were a couple of shootings that occurred that resulted in the deaths of some high school students in the district at the time of this campaign, and you confront elected school board members with that reality, they understand that they really cannot rationalize having these shooting ranges. So it is an issue that you can win on. Unfortunately, I think not enough people around the country are aware that these activities are going on in some of their schools. But I think that if they did mobilize, they could actually do something about it.
Well, Rick, I just think that since you started, it must be harder to present alternatives, because it seems like with the economy and with the lack of jobs and how expensive schools going to university has become, and how little help that young people get to go to university, they have to take out these horrible loans that last mostly the rest of their lives. It must seem attractive to young people, as it was for my own son. That's the reason he joined the military, was because he was promised a college education. Is it harder to present alternatives to our young people than it was when you first started, or really even since, maybe we should talk about since 9/11 in this new so-called era?
It's not hard to present the information. What I think we have to recognize is that, yes, it's true that there are limited resources put into other alternatives, especially financial aid for school. But often what happens is that the students who feel the most pressure to join the military, and that these are kids who are coming from low-income communities, mostly youth of color, they have less access to information on what is available. So merely collecting that kind of information about alternatives and bringing it to those students actually does make a difference. And you wouldn't even know until you try how desperate they are for that kind of alternative information. And from our own experience working with young people in our schools, we see how it makes a difference, how they find out that, in fact, there are sources of financial aid for college. And there's even sources for students who are undocumented immigrants. So it exists. There is not enough of it. True. And that is the case in part because of our spending priorities in this country and how much we spend on war.
Right.
But presenting the information is not so much the issue. It's what is needed is community activists who are willing to take the time to collect the information and then organize what's necessary to get it to students.
I think present, I used was the wrong word. For some reason, my brain isn't in gear yet this morning. I think I meant the lack of resources makes it hard to give young people an alternative.
Yes, it does. But if you go, for example, to our website, to projectyano.org, there are two directories that you can download of alternatives. One of them focuses on financial aid for college, and there are several pages of resources for that. If you look at another directory, it's on job training and job placement programs, which is mostly regional for us. You'll see that there are still a lot of agencies and a lot of programs available. It's just helping young people make the connection with those programs. That's the difficulty. And like I said, you're right. There is not enough of those programs, and in part it's again because of our prior spending priorities. But the important thing to us is to make sure that the students who feel the most pressure to go into the military and fight our country's wars, that they know that there are options, because they're the ones who are going to write themselves off if they don't hear about alternatives, and they're going to feel they have no real choice.
I think this is probably a related subject, but even if our young people are able to get through college or university, then they graduate and there's absolutely no jobs available for them.
Right. The economic crash of 2008 is what has made the most difference for recruiting, mm-hmm. for military recruiting. It's always been the case that the unemployment rate is the most relevant factor when it comes to recruiting success rate. As the unemployment rate gradually improves, which it is doing, it is going to be harder for recruiters to meet their quotas, even with the reduction, the small reduction in forces that's been going on. It's going to become difficult. And that also means that, in fact, that the job situation in general is going to improve. We go through these cycles. And unfortunately, we went through a very difficult cycle with 2008. But eventually, it's going to shift back. And in fact, when you look at the climate of opinion about our wars, you see how that has shifted. I'm fairly confident, having looked at and observed and gone through these cycles before, I'm confident that's going to change. Not that it is going to be what we think it should be, but I do think that there's going to be more hope and more possibility, but it's just going to take, you know, a few more years before people begin to really feel confident about that.
And so let's talk about this new reality of the military, where a lot of the U.S. hostility we're using the drone technology now, and Barack Obama has greatly expanded the use of drone technology. And I have, since like 3 days after he was president, I've been, I jumped on this when he ordered his first drone strike. But people tell me, and they say, Cindy, if we had been using drone technology when your son was in Iraq, he might still be alive, so why are you opposing it? Talk a little bit about the work of Project Yano and NOMI around this issue.
Well, there are groups that are actually dedicated to focusing on the issue of drones and the use of drones in warfare. I wouldn't say that we are one
of
those groups.
How is the military targeting our young people with this new technology?
It's a technological draw, but there's two aspects to it. One of them is that the shift toward using drones is designed to make warfare less painful for us,
right?
Not for the other people,
right?
But for us, and that is in part a response to the overall difficulty of getting people to join the military. In a sense, it's almost a reflection of how effective opposition has been over the years, or at least over the decades, that they feel they have to shift direction. And then the other aspect of it is that now, in fact, recruiting vehicles that have been traveling and going to high schools for many years now are including drone equipment and simulators as a way to draw young people in and make them think this is a way to learn about new technology, and you get to use these fancy toys. It reflects a very a dangerous trend toward desensitizing people toward war and the effects of war. So it really concerns us that it's being used to fight wars, but also that it's being used to entice young people to accept their own involvement in those wars, and that's dangerous because the insensitivity is something that I think a lot of us have been worried about, and we see it happening through other means as well, you know, just in general, computer gaming and all, although not all computer gaming fosters insensitivity of this type, but it is there, and it concerns many of us.
Yeah, it's very, very dangerous, and many of the drone pilots, and I use air quotes when I say pilots, some chaplains are reporting that they're having some really great, and I'm glad to hear this, that they're having moral problems after they do it for a while.
Yeah. When we talk to young people about they're deciding themselves about whether or not they want to join the military, I think it's always important to not just talk about, you know, are you going to get the benefits? Will you get the training that's promised you and so forth? Right. But also talk about the implications of that. It's one thing to think that, oh, well, that there's a good cause here. We're going to be defending freedom. We're going to be defending ourselves. But it's another thing when you don't contest that and you just let it go, and all you do is concentrate on educating young people about benefits and recruiters that might be misrepresenting, you know, promises and so forth. I think you have to confront young people with the question of, you know, how valuable is that financial aid to you? Are you willing to be involved in causing the kind of destruction and death that we have created in parts of the world? That is what you should be focusing on. Will you justify that by simply saying, I will get financial aid?
Right. That's a very good point, and I'm glad to hear that you're making it, because to me, it's like a lot of organizations focus on the cost of war, the monetary cost of war, and they don't really focus on the psychic and the emotional costs of war. I think that might be a little hard for some people, especially like you said, the empire tries to move those costs of wars, the human costs of wars, as far away from the average American as possible. And here we just had this VA scandal. They put our young people through these meat grinders, literal meat grinders, and then they get home and they can't access the help they need. And so what does the empire do? They throw Eric Shinseki under the bus, and then the problem solved.
Yes.
You know, so that's how the empire takes care of its troops. That's how we're supposed to support the troops. How can my listeners help this issue? I always tell people when I'm around the country, speaking around the country, that really getting to our young people with this kind of information is probably the most valuable peace action that we can do.
Like Naomi says,
stop it, you know, stop it there before it's even a problem. So how can my listeners get involved? I just don't want them to go to your website. I do want them to go to your websites and get the information, but I also want them to go in front of high schools and pass out flyers and talk to young people. So tell my listeners how they can help.
Well, there are a lot of activities that they can consider. One of them is leafleting in front of schools in the mornings. It's been done in many places, and it's very effective. But I think that it's important for them to either find a group that they can connect with that would be willing to work on the issue, or find individuals to form a group. Individuals can do this sort of thing on their own, but they're limited in how effective they will be. So it's important, I think, to connect with others. And in some cases, there might be a Veterans for Peace chapter or a social justice organization that focuses on education and poverty and issues like that. They might find some openness there to working on this issue. When it comes to actual activities, the kinds of things that are going on around the country include speakers pools that offer resources to teachers to have speakers in classrooms. They give presentations at workshops. Some groups sponsor essays or spoken word contests. They do that in Fort Worth, Texas, for example. Some groups have individuals who go to high school career centers with literature, and they offer the information to be placed there where the military literature is. Some groups get in touch with the counselors at the school and find out about college fairs and career fairs, and they put together what's needed for a display on alternatives to the military. Some groups organize and have a table at lunchtime. That's done in Austin, Texas, all the time. Mm-hmm. Support for student activism is another important thing. When you find out about local social justice clubs, sometimes they're willing to have a presentation on the issue, and then they can carry the ball. They can educate their peers. In Long Beach, for example, there's a network of peace clubs that counter-recruitment activists have supported. You can investigate whether the schools have junior ROTC, whether the students are put in involuntarily, whether there are shooting ranges, and then you can make an issue out of some of those some of that information. You can, when you find out about junior ROTC, you can find out whether the enrollment is low. There's a minimum enrollment required to have the program, and if the enrollment is low, you can demand that the units be cut. There's a National Lawyers Guild memo on that. You can become involved at the policy level and ask school boards to adopt guidelines for all recruiting activities, which has been done in LA and New York City and Chicago and San Diego, and they're considering one in Santa Barbara, California right now. You can propose a policy to the school district that if they're going to allow the military's aptitude test to be given, that it only be given on condition that the results not be automatically released to the military, because that is what happens in like over 80% of the cases where students take that test. And some states have made it a policy to not allow it to be automatically released, including Maryland and Hawaii and New Hampshire just made it law a week or so ago. So there are a lot of things that can be done. But the first thing I believe, and unfortunately it means just going to the website, go to the Project IANA website, and there is a report there called Using Equal Access to Counter Militarism in High Schools. And if you read that, you will see not only a lot of ideas for activities, but you'll also get some advice on what to do and what not to do, because there are some things that people have tried that have not worked out very well. And it's important to know about those.
Yes.
And then
we don't have to reinvent the wheel, but we don't have to keep making
the same mistakes. Exactly. And then the NOMY website, which is nnomy.org. is a great central national resource for information. There's a back-to-school organizing kit there. They have a national counter-recruitment discussion group you can subscribe to. It's a Yahoo group, and so there's a lot of exchange that occurs there. War Resisters League has bulk literature that can be used. They distribute Project Yano's counter-recruitment brochure. It's not just a job. They also have one directed towards females. And so you can talk, you can contact World Resisters League about getting literature, and some of the literature that's that we produce can be downloaded and then reproduced locally. So there's a lot of things. And what I would say is that, you know, if there are any questions that your listeners have or they want to pursue this further, they should feel free to get in touch with me at Project Yano. I can take their call. I can give them advice and help them troubleshoot. And, you know, that's the one of the things that we do as an organization for this whole movement.
Well, Rick Jonkow, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. And in our newsletter and on our website, we'll post all of the links and hope that we can work together to stop wars before they stop our young people from joining these wars. Because I think we have to stop it at the source. It's not going to, the military-industrial complex, the war profiteers, the politicians, they have no interest in ending wars. But we, the people in the working class and poor classes, we need to stop, like, sacrificing our children on the altar of their profit.
I agree 100%, and that I'm glad to hear that people see it that way, because really stopping it where it starts means going into the schools and reaching people while they're young and not when it's too late.
Well, I've heard of the military talking to kids as young as 10 years old. So, you know, we have to start talking to them in preschool.
Absolutely.
So, Rick, thank you. And that's what we're doing here in our family, is that we're trying to, and like I did with my own children, it was just a shock to us that Casey joined the military, is we have to promote a culture of peace.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Rick Jonkow, for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. And thank you for your work.
Thank you for having us.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for this week. I really hope that if you know young people, or if you are interested in helping stop our young people from joining the military, that you'll go to the Project Yano sites and the NOMI site. And of course, those links will be posted at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. As always, I'd like to thank Don DeBar, my engineer, my production assistant, Dee Dee Miller, my sometimes associate producer, Mikey. I'd like to thank Rick Jonkow for the work he does and for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox this week. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.